Hello out there, my friends. This is Tim Benal of BenalofAmerica.com with another edition of Benal of America Audio. It is October 14th, 2006. This week, we conclude our lengthy marathon conversation with Paul Kimball of Red Star Films and the blog The Other Side of Truth, where we discuss a host of various aspects of the UFO phenomenon and ufology. We're going to be discussing some more of the problems of ufology today, the Condon effect, how the Condon Report chilled mainstream interest in the UFO phenomenon. We're going to talk about how to regenerate that mainstream interest, why Paul doesn't see a grand conspiracy behind the UFO enigma, ufology on the internet, and why more young people aren't gravitating towards solving the riddle that is the UFO. Plus, of course, tons more, including a preview of Paul's two new films, Fields of Fear and Best Evidence Top 10 UFO Cases. We're going to be covering all that and much, much more in this week's installment. If you're unfamiliar with Paul Kimball, check out part 1 of 2 where we discuss his background, how he got into documentary filmmaking, and some of his early UFO films. But if you just want to skip to part 2, here's a little bit of background on Paul Kimball. Paul graduated from Acadia University in 1989 with an honors degree in history and political science, and in 1992 from Dalhousie Law School with an LLB. He won multiple scholarships and awards, including the University Medal in History at both Acadia University and the University of Dundee, as well as the CLB Award at Dalhousie Law School. After working for the Nova Scotia Film Development Corporation and Salter Street Films, and as a consultant on film and television to the governments of Prince Edward Island and Newfoundland, Paul founded Red Star Films Limited in 1999. His work as a producer and director since includes documentaries for networks including CBC, Vision, Bravo, SCN, and Space, The Imagination Station, as well as the television series The Classical Now. Paul is a member of the Nova Scotia Barrister Society and the Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. He served as president of the Nova Scotia Film and Television Producers Association from 2002 to 2004 and is currently a member of the Film Advisory Committee for the Province of Nova Scotia. His website is redstarfilms.blogspot.com, known to those in the know as The Other Side of Truth. Without any further ado, let's rock and roll. This interview was recorded on August 12, 2006. Paul Kimball, Part 2 of 2 on Benal of America Audio, Season 2.
I think the serious study of the UFO phenomenon is going to have to take place in another form. It's going to be a form that's probably going to include some people who are in ufology now, guys like Kevin Randall, but they're going to have to, if you really wanted to move it forward, Tim, you would sort of, in some sense, have to disassociate yourself with a lot of these elements in ufology and move into another realm and not worry about whether the believers call you a skeptic monkey or a debunker or whatever, just ignore them and start trying to deal with science and historians and get them interested.
You say that in order for a serious study of UFO phenomenon to be done, it needs to sort of disassociate itself from that. How, do you think that's even possible, and how do you think that would even happen?
No, I don't think it's completely possible. And, you know, in my previous answer, sometimes I know I can come across as sounding strident and a little, you know, it rubs people the wrong way sometimes. And I want to make it very clear, and there will be people, I know who they are, who won't believe me, or who will say I'm now damning with faint praise. I've been on Coast to Coast. I'd like to go back on Coast to Coast. I'm now a Coast to Coast StreamLink member. You know, I participate in the message boards and stuff. It's fun. And it's good. It's a good conversation to have. But are, you know, those people, and I think most of them recognize, are not out there doing real research. They're people who are interested in the subject. That's fine. You need people who are interested in the subject. If a historian goes out and writes a book about World War II and has researched it, gone through the archives, talked to witnesses, whatever, most people don't or can't or won't do that. That's fine. They have real lives. They have real jobs. They're the ones who buy the books. Here's the problem in ufology. I don't think ufology has differentiated between the people who write the books, if you will, and the people who buy them.
Yeah.
I think the people who buy the books believe that they're somehow equal to the people who are writing them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all for equality of opportunity, but I'm not for equality of situation.
Yeah.
So if you want to go out and do your own research and write your own book, you can make yourself into a UFO researcher. And then you open yourself up to the inevitable criticism or the inevitable applause that will come from that. You do a good job, people will say, great job. You do a bad job, people will criticize you. When people criticize you, don't take it personally, unless they say you're a bleeping idiot. Okay, that you can take personally. But if they just criticize your methodology or your conclusions, that's not personal. You have to expect that if you're going to go out there. So when the National Post reporter criticized my film as visually boring, I didn't jump up and down and go, damn you all to hell. You horrible person, you hate me. I said, does any of this make sense? Well, I agree with some of it. I will now sort of bring that into how I do future films. He raised a couple of good points. I should consider that. I didn't take it personally because I've never met the guy. So how could it be personal? And I'm sure he didn't mean it personally. So, but the fundamental problem is too many cooks, not enough people eating. And the people who are eating think that they're all cooks.
Yeah.
And yet they've never actually done any research. There are so many people out there who claim to be UFO researchers who have no idea what research really is. Here's a clue. Reading on Wikipedia, not research. With no offense to Banal of America or any of its contributors, writing an opinion column, not research. Mm-hmm. It's opinion. That's fine. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. Some are worth more than others, depending on the research that backs it up. Great. Absolutely. Going through archives, that's research. Interviewing witnesses or people who know something, that's research. Doing that kind of legwork, that's research. That's why Stan Friedman and Dick Hall and Kevin Randall and Brad Sparks, who spent years and years and years doing that kind of stuff, their opinions are worth more than the opinions of people who haven't done that because they've actually done the research. Now, you can still disagree with their opinion, but at least you have to respect the research that they've done. So when people, what really chuffs me sometimes, because it's insulting, is when people say, I'm a UFO researcher. Well, first of all, what does that mean? Like, have you researched everything, every single case? No, you are a Roswell researcher because that's, say, your primary area of research has been Roswell.
Yeah.
And you have an interest in UFOs overall, but Roswell's the case you focus on. It's like saying you're a military historian. Well, okay, fine. But if your primary focus is on World War II, then perhaps your opinions on the Peloponnesian War that you've never read about or looked at, maybe that's not the guy you want to get on television to talk about the Peloponnesian War.
Yeah.
Fine. So you can have a general interest in the entire subject, and you can be a researcher in particular aspects of it. And there's so much to the subject that to call somebody a UFO researcher, I just don't know how you can do that because it's like being a doctor. You're the equivalent of a general practitioner. Yeah, you know a bit about everything, but if I want open heart surgery, I'll go find an open heart surgeon.
Yeah.
You know. So there you go.
And do you think part of the problem is that there's no overarching sort of organization to ufology in general? It's like it sort of grew up spontaneously out of the phenomenon in the sky, and then it, like you said, it sort of grew up as a social phenomenon. Do you think that's part of the problem, that there's no overriding organization to provide that sort of peer review?
There used to be. In fact, ufology grew up largely because of NICAP and APRO, two different organizations.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1950s and carried on through the 60s, and in APRO's case, I think into the 70s, maybe even the early 80s. Kevin Randall used to be an investigator for APRO. He investigated cattle mutilations for them, for instance. Dick Hall was with NICAP. Obviously, it was Donald Kehoe's baby, but there were a lot of other people who were involved with it.
Yeah.
In those days, for whatever flaws those organizations might have had, and they did have them, every organization does, at least you could go and say, look, NICAP has a staff, it has resources, however small they might be, that's a group we can look at as the central focus of research. Now, you can have more than one group, absolutely,
mm-hmm.
and they did. Others came up, QFOS, which Hynek founded, FUFOR, Fund for UFO Research was another one, all of which had slightly different mandates to one degree or another, but all of which did good work. How many of those are still functioning today? Well, QFOS hangs on by the skin of its teeth, I think. NICAP is no more. APRO is no more. I think the Fund for UFO Research is still extant to the extent that it exists, but what work they actually do or research they fund is either minimal or non-existent, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And MUFON is, of course, the other big one. And MUFON, unlike maybe the other four, is more of a believers group in the sense that MUFON claims to have all these field researchers who engage in scientific research. Well, yeah. you should ask yourself, what exactly did they get by way of training? You know, and if you actually look at the training that MUFON gives, it's better than nothing in one way, but it's worse than nothing in another. Because there's nothing maybe worse than somebody who thinks they're an expert because they have a little bit of training, as opposed to having a whole bunch of people who know that they're not experts because they have no training, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So, to answer your question, though, absolutely, you need an organization. One would be great. You know, United Nations of UFO research.
Yeah.
But you can have more than one. Scientific research, even within particular disciplines, like, say, the research into AIDS, for instance, trying to find a vaccine. Different groups are working on it. But you can generally look at broad overarching groups. Take the law, for instance. In Nova Scotia, I'm a member of the Nova Scotia Barristers Society. That regulates the ethics, the behavior of all lawyers, practicing and non-practicing, in Nova Scotia. There's a handbook. I wrote this once, and somebody said, "Whoa, lawyers." Well, I'm sorry, folks. Again, you indicate your ignorance. In this case, this person, their overwhelming ignorance and their own prejudices about what they're talking about. You know, lawyers are bound by a code of ethics. If you breach those code of ethics, you can get into serious trouble, and that sort of governs, and within the profession, lawyers can go off and do criminal law, family law, whatever. And each area of law has its own committees and stuff that look after it. So in theory, you could have an overarching group. Call it the World UFO Research Organization or whatever, under which you could have a Roswell subcommittee. You could have an alien abduction subcommittee if you want, if there were enough people who believed that that was something worth taking seriously, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you would have concepts like peer review. You would have you would also have one group that the media could come to, and you could send out a directed message. Ufologists should ask themselves, why has SETI, which they often like to criticize, been far more successful at capturing the public's imagination, capturing dollars, both from government and the private sector, and just generally being more acceptable than ufology? Because it's SETI. You know, they have an organization.
Yeah.
They have one or two spokespeople that go out. Seth Shostak is one, sometimes Jill Tarter, sometimes Frank Drake, but primarily Shostak goes out. Those are the guys that speak for SETI, even though SETI, as Seth often will point out, is this very loose organization. They're, you know, it's not like some sort of rigid fascist kind of group where everybody, you know, you worker drones, you will do this. I mean, they're scientists, for heaven's sake. Put 10 scientists in a room and try and get them to agree on how to do anything. It's like economists.
Yeah.
But SETI has captured the public imagination because SETI exists. When the media want to comment on extraterrestrial life, they go to SETI. They call Seth Shostak. You're the guys with the telescopes, right? We know who to call. You've got a number.
Yeah.
Who do you call for ufology? Say there's a sighting. Well, if you're in Fredericton, New Brunswick, you might call Stan because he's your local guy. And you'll probably get a reasonably intelligent answer because Stan's a reasonably intelligent guy. If you're in Great Falls, Montana, I think Great Falls is Montana, or wherever, Kansas City, Missouri, there you go.
If you're
in Kansas City, Missouri, who do you call? The center of America. Well, I mean, you can go east, north, west, south. Well, if you look on the internet, you might get Stan or Kevin or Dick Hall even. Or, you know, you might get Stephen Greer. Might be the first name you see, and so you call Dr. Greer for a comment. There's no uniformity of message. And I'm not talking about everybody agreeing with everything, some sort of rigid mind speak. But everybody singing at least from the same pew, everybody accepting a certain methodology, everybody accepting that there will be certain spokespeople for this group. That is how you move forward. That's how you get yourself wedged into the mainstream media and into the mainstream scientific discourse for different reasons. If you don't have that, then you are what ufology is today. A lot of people, many of whom have fairly large egos, their egos are writing checks that their talent just can't cash, frankly, arguing over the most minute points of detail that nobody else gives a rat's ass about, as opposed to thinking in the big picture. Ufology is one of those sort of endeavors of study that is constantly undermined by people not seeing the forest because they're bumping into trees. And those trees are usually cases or parts of cases, as in Roswell, now arguing about whether Marcel brought the wreckage home. Boink, that's a tree. you know, that you just ran into. And meanwhile, you're in this giant forest of UFOs are interesting, they should be taken seriously, but we're off arguing about whether an 11-year-old kid saw wreckage almost 60 years ago. You know, how does that move the serious study of the UFO phenomenon forward? I don't think it does, and yet a lot of these people on UFO updates do, and they're the ones, you know, that by and large comprise ufology today. So good for them. They can continue their never-ending argument amongst themselves. It just doesn't accomplish anything. And if you don't believe me, if you think, whoa, Kimball's some horrible debunker, here's two things for you to chew on. One, I want the serious study of UFO phenomenon to move forward. I've always advocated that as long as I've been, you know, in the short time I've been in studying UFOs. That's what I'm advocating. My films are designed to do that. My writings are designed to do that. Even if I debunk a case, say, like Aztec, it's so that you can get Aztec out of the way and go look at the good cases.
Yeah.
When I'm on Coast to Coast, I don't talk about Aztec. I talk about RB-47. You know, I will refer to the good cases and tell people to go look at those. I want people to take the phenomenon seriously, whatever it might be. So remember that. And the second thing, I suppose, to remember is that I'm right. And if you think I'm wrong, then ask yourself, where has the serious study of UFOs got in the last 60 years, say from 1947? Where is it today? Where was it in the 50s? Has it moved forward in any way, shape, or form? Ask yourself that question. If you think it has, that's good for you. But I don't think you've seriously considered the question or looked at the evidence, because UFOs were more into the there were more scientists like Jim McDonald and Alan Hynek taking it seriously 20, 30, 40 years ago. The mainstream media took it more seriously 40 years ago. You can look at the articles in old magazines. Yes, there were some debunking articles, but magazines like U.S. News and World Report would publish serious articles on the UFO phenomenon.
What do you think happened that caused this this turning away from scientists and mainstream coverage and serious...
Two things. Probably more than two, but I'll focus on two.
Okay.
One, without doubt, is the Condon Report in the late 1960s. I did a blog column, I called it the Condon Effect. Mm-hmm. The Condon Report, when it came out, a terribly flawed report written by a guy, Edward Condon, who was biased from the get-go. How science should not be done. Edward Condon was a great scientist, made a lot of very solid contributions to scientific knowledge in the 20th century. Unfortunately, if you're into UFOs, all that you'll ever remember Ed Condon for was making a horrible contribution to the serious scientific study of the UFO phenomenon. Didn't take it seriously, had preconceived notions about what the answers were, and ignored his own evidence. If you read the Condon Report, what he wrote, and compare it to the evidence that exists, you'd think, wait a second now, are these two different studies? Because the Condon evidence showed that there was still a significant body of cases that could not be explained. Now, maybe a lot of them could be explained with more investigation. I don't know. But to just conclude from everything that Condon had in front of him, well, there's nothing really to the UFO phenomenon, and it's not worthy of further serious scientific study, waste of time, just completely a bogus conclusion.
Yeah.
But it's also one that science took to heart, and that the military took to heart, and that everybody, the media took to heart and said, well, here, this is a serious scientific study with a serious scientist, which Condon was, who had serious people working for him, and the conclusion is nothing to it.
Yeah.
Well, why should we look at it then? And I think that's what happened. And you, by the way, you can look, for instance, in Canada, I pointed this out, I think I'm probably the only person, you want to talk about research, here's research. Go, I'm the only person that I know of that, and maybe there are others, but none that I've seen in public, who went through the entire record of Hansard, the House of Commons reports, all the debates and everything, from the late 1940s right up to the modern day, today, to see what references there were to UFOs and other sort of ancillary topics.
Yeah.
Up until the late 1960s, until the Condon Report, I wouldn't say it was an overwhelming subject. Things like defense of the realm and taxes and social policy were obviously more important. But it was a subject that was often brought up in the House of Commons, especially in the late 60s with the Mishalik case. Which, you know, I don't want to get into it. Check it out on the web, though.
Yeah.
But there were our future Governor General of Canada, who is the sort of head of state of Canada, the equivalent of the president in the United States, at least that half of his function of being head of state, has no real power, but it's still, you know, a significant position, represents the Queen here, Ed Schreier. At the time, Schreier was a New Democratic member of parliament in Canada. He quickly, almost immediately after the Mishalik case, left parliament to become premier, leader of the New Democratic Party in Manitoba, and then premier of Manitoba, the equivalent of a governor for your American listeners, for I think 8 or 9 years, and then became Canada's, I think he was the youngest governor general in Canada's history, or one of the 2 or 3 youngest. The point being, Schreier, serious politician, you know, like a real serious politician, not some kooky backbencher maybe who had some spare time in his hands.
Yeah.
There were other politicians who took it seriously, too. They would ask questions in the House of Commons of people like the Minister of Defense, the Minister of Transport, about particular UFO cases or maybe even the UFO phenomenon in general.
Mm-hmm.
All of that stopped pretty much. You can draw a direct link between the Condon Report and that coming to an end.
Yeah.
After the late 1960s, there's only been one question that I could find ever asked in the House of Commons in Canada about UFOs. I was asked in the mid-1970s by somebody who said, did we, meaning you, the government, give, I think it was about $6,000 to so-and-so to conduct a study into the UFO phenomenon when there's already been a serious American scientific study, i.e. the Condon Report, although he didn't name it,
yeah,
that has shown that this is all pretty much bunkum. To which the government responded, yes, we gave $6,000 to the Canadian Arts Council or whatever, to this guy, to conduct a historical study of UFOs in Canada. Excuse me. Which
Sorry.
Is, you know, basically just to view it historically, and government gives out that kind of money all the time.
Yeah.
And the purpose of the question was to sort of, as they always do, try and make the government look silly for spending money on silly things.
Yeah.
So it was a political question. But that's it. There hasn't been a question on UFOs since. That's not because of some great overarching conspiracy where everybody who goes to the House of Commons is immediately told by CSIS, our CIA, you must not talk about this. This is Majestic 12 clearance level, blah, blah, blah. Or we'll kill you. It's simply because of the Condon Report and the effect that has come from that ever since. Turning point in ufological history. However, I said there were two things, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. The other thing is how ufology dealt with it.
Yeah.
And what they should have done is they should have said, you know what? We respect Dr. Condon's opinion, but it's only an opinion. What we'd rather do is look at the data. Here it is. This is the data that Dr. Condon didn't reference, or perhaps his conclusion was this, but we're going to tell you this conclusion over here. The same thing, picture what happened with the Seeing is Believing documentary, because the same thing happened by and large with the Condon Report.
Yeah.
When Seeing is Believing came out, nobody, by and large, looked at the good stuff, which was more or less the first hour.
Yeah.
They focused on Stan Friedman being called a Roswell promoter, which I admit, you know, not good. Shouldn't
yeah,
have used
lousy.
Those choice of words. Although, I think Stan is a Roswell promoter in the sense that he promotes the Roswell case. I'm not sure that's the sense that Jennings in the documentary meant it, but, you know, Stan is a Roswell promoter. I'm a promoter of the RB-47 case. There you go. But the reaction was way over the top. Instead of trying to frame the debate and say, A, we just had a major network in front of millions of people put on a UFO special that, yes, debunked alien abductions in Roswell, but those are incredibly controversial things even within ufology.
Yeah.
The first hour made the case that the UFO phenomenon should be taken seriously. There's something to it. And the final speaker, Michio Kaku, one of our foremost scientists today, said, well, you know, UFOs, I don't know, but we should keep an open mind. Instead of focusing on the good stuff, ufology just got all aggrieved, and their egos got kefuffled, and they went, brr!
Yeah.
That's just the forest trees. You know, they miss the big picture because they're so obsessed with the little things. Same thing, by and large, I think happened with the Condon Report. They didn't frame the response to it very well. And then by the time things maybe, you know, started getting rolling again, it was Roswell. And you moved into crashed alien spacecraft and alien abduction, the two things that the Jennings special took some shots at.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two things that still remain incredibly controversial, even within ufology.
Yeah.
And so if that's what you tie your horse to, which ufology for 25 years now has more or less done, alien abductions, Roswell, or Roswell / crashed flying saucers.
Yeah.
then you've taken a giant step away from A, B, C, D, E. Remember when I referenced those are the five things we can prove, and those all the other letters are the ones we can't? You should have stuck with the five things you can prove and used those to argue against Condon and the people that would support Condon and have a real debate. Instead, what ufology did, and I don't think it's a conscious decision, it just happened, is they went with, you know, F through Z, the things that you couldn't prove or the things that are absolutely false. And that combination of the Condon report and then where ufology went after that, I think has been what's led it to where it is today, which is on the fringe of the fringe, not taken seriously by science, not taken really seriously by most people in the media. And I think, you know, ufologists will often trot out public opinion polls that will say, well, you know, 62% or whatever people believe that maybe UFOs are visiting Earth, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, public opinion polls, so what? At one point in time, the majority of American people thought President Bush was a good president. Now they don't.
Yeah.
If things work out in a year, it'll flip back, and George Bush might be the greatest thing since sliced cheese if magically everything solves itself. Public opinion polls are not the way to measure this, you know, how your field is doing.
Yeah.
The way to measure how your field is doing is whether you're actually doing good work. To do good work, you need good people. To get good people, by which I mean scientists, historians, and more than just one or two. Brad Sparks once said to me, if you wanted to make a real dent in solving the UFO problem, you would need 100 Nobel-caliber scientists.
Huh, good luck.
Exactly. You're not going to get them today. He said, we don't even have one. But, you know, maybe the best you could hope for is a dozen or something like that. But you to solve a real problem, you need resources, which means money. Nobody's going to give money to a field where it's confused with, you know, sort of the wacky fringe.
Yeah.
You need talented people. Ufology has a few now, but you need more, and you need people who, I'd be the first to admit, somebody came along to me and said, you know what, Paul, you're a bright guy, but you're not the guy to solve the UFO problem. And I certainly don't think I am. I'd go, you know what, you're right. I'm not. At the moment, all I can do is some historical research and offer opinions on other things. That's basically what all of us can do. What we need are you guys. We want you guys to come over here and work on this problem. But the problem, Tim, is the way ufology is structured, it's not going to happen. Because if those people come in and they say A, B, C, D, and E are provable, let's work from that, they get attacked publicly, smeared publicly as debunkers, as agents of the government, as misinformation, disinformation agents, ridiculed, not by guys like Kevin Randall, but by the fringers.
Yeah.
And who needs that? They look at it. I've talked to some people that I think could make a real contribution to the UFO, study of the UFO phenomenon, and they say, Paul, you've basically got a website devoted to making you look like Hitler. Why would we want to subject ourselves to that?
Yeah.
And I go, well, maybe I have thicker skin than most, but I certainly understand where they're coming from. But that's what people within ufology do. Not the good ones, but the fringers. They ignore the evidence. They attack you personally. And as soon as you disagree with them, they are not people with whom you can have a reasonable, rational conversation. And that is what real researchers want to do. They need to do.
Yeah.
You have to have a reasoned, rational conversation where people can agree to disagree without calling each other Christo-fascists or, you know, whatever else you want to call them. And so that kind of smear tactic is endemic in ufology amongst a certain group. By the way, debunkers like Phil Klass have done it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the believers. They're two sides of the same coin. They're like Nazis and communists.
Yeah.
It's a circle. And at some point, the Nazis met the communists, and they're both evil and bad. Well, ditto. The true debunkers, the ones who just debunk for the sake of debunking, and the true believers, and I think there are more of the believers than the debunkers, but whatever.
Yeah.
They're both the same. They just will never recognize it, but they're the same type of people. Between that is the great center of skeptical people with open minds who really want to look and try and find the truth and disagree about particulars, but to get real serious people into that, you've just got to completely divorce yourself both from the debunkers and from the true believers. And that's the problem with ufology. It'll never happen. Because to do that, you'd have to actually sort of say, you know what, this UFO list, you're not going to be on it. Sorry, but you've just spent the last month calling these eight people names because they disagree with you. You're gone. You know, you have to clean house. It's like the Aegean stable. So you need somebody to go in and clean the house. Never happen. because people don't have the will for it, people don't have the stomach for it, and frankly, a lot of people don't think it needs to be done. They don't agree with me. They think things are fine as they are. Well, if what you want is a talking shop where friends can get together and converse about UFOs and stuff, and you can all make yourself feel good and important, great. That's what you've got. If you actually want to make some effort towards solving the UFO riddle, as it were, then you need to restructure things. And, you know, there's an awful lot of people, Tim, who will listen to this who will not like what I just said. That's fine.
That's fine. You know, I'll give you a chance to say whatever you want. I don't really care.
I know. That's why I like Tim Dinal. This season, I'm sure you'll have an exopolitics person on putting their thing forward. And, you know, frankly, all I can ask of people is listen to the two. If it's me versus an exopolitics person, you know, two sides, and which one makes more sense? And if you think they do, great. Good luck. But I think most people listening would think that to some degree or another, I'm making sense. You know why? Because that's the way the rest of the world is ordered. You know, anytime you make an advance, anytime a field is put together, anytime people do things, there is a need for methodology, for structure. And I'm sorry, the internet isn't it. The internet can help, but just being in an internet chat group doesn't make you a researcher intent on solving the UFO problem or question or whatever you want to call it.
So do you think if there ever is an ultimate answer to this, it's obviously going to have to come out from outside of the UFO field? Maybe it'll be discovered by accident or something or you know,
yes.
Something like that?
Absolutely. I think it'll be discovered by people other than the people who are researching into UFOs now. And I'll add a caveat to that. The answers, as Grant Sparks suggested, may still be in government files like Project Blue Book that we haven't looked at yet,
yep.
Or that haven't really been vetted yet. That might be. If UFOs really are here and UFOs exist, but if they are aliens and they're really here, for instance, then yeah, sure. Maybe someday they will land on the White House lawn, or they will make themselves known in a broad sense, in which case it will be discovered by someone other than ufologists, meaning the aliens will reveal themselves. Could happen. I think one of the huge mistakes ufology has made over the years, and it's more of a mistake of omission as opposed to commission, it's something they haven't done and should have done, is they should have and should still tie themselves as closely as they can to the effort to explore space by us.
Yeah.
Because if you really want to find out if there's life out there, and even if it's coming here, we should be getting out there. So I wrote a blog thing about a year ago saying, kudos to President Bush for announcing that a concrete plan to get to the moon and Mars.
Yeah.
I don't care why he's doing it. I don't care. It needs to be done.
Yeah.
We spent 40 years dicking about in the atmosphere, flying shuttles around and building space stations that don't really do a lot. I mean, we were on the moon 40 years ago almost. What have we done since? You want to talk about a lack of progress.
Yeah.
So ufology should, and with this symposium I'm doing, I've got Stan in. What's Stan talking about? Stan's not talking about the cosmic Watergate. Stan's not talking about Roswell. I specifically asked Stan to talk about flying saucers and physics.
Yeah.
How can you travel between stars? Either them or us. Let's talk about, because Stan, that's what you began your career doing. And Stan jumped at the chance. Stan, I think, outside of his publicity campaign and getting people interested in UFOs, I think his other primary contribution to ufology was early on in his career when he was writing papers like The Physics of Flying Saucers, because that's what Stan did. He worked on advanced nuclear propulsion systems. He knows something about what he's talking about. Great. So Stan will be speaking about that. I'll have Robert Zimmerman, who wrote Leaving Space. Arthur Clarke called it, I think, I paraphrase here, but the most comprehensive history of NASA and space exploration ever. Words to that effect, anyway, for Arthur Clarke. Zimmerman, great space historian, great writer, and he'll be there, and he won't be talking about UFOs at all. He'll be talking about space stories, the history of our guys going up there to explore. And I think ufology could really benefit from trying to link itself to that movement. Not necessarily the peace movement, but that movement. Let's get us off of this little rock and get out to Mars. You want to know if there's life on Mars? A great way to find out is to go. You know, and not just a little robot that can travel 5 miles by 5 miles. Let's get there ourselves. Let's get a colony or a space station on the moon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And ufologists with whatever credit or credibility they might have, should be part of the chorus that is saying, look, we want to go out there. The best way to find out if there is anything out there is for us to get out there too. And you never really hear that from them, and maybe it wouldn't do any good if they did. Maybe no one would listen to them, because there's a lot of other people which have far greater public profiles that are saying the same thing. But every little bit helps. So, and I think they'd win over some converts if they were seen to be part of that movement. So, but instead, when I said, good, kudos to President Bush, I got labeled by one guy as a Christo-fascist lapdog of the imperialist warmonger Bush or whatever. Well, of course, you know, you can hate Bush for the Iraq war if you want, but nobody's pure evil. Not everybody does everything wrong. Even Bush, if you hate him, you should be willing to say, you know what? He was wrong about all this other stuff, but the space thing, he's right about that.
Yeah.
So check for that, X for all the other stuff. But, you know, so many people, it's so polarized these days, they can't see the good as well as the bad. And they assume that if you say something good about somebody like Bush, you're obviously a Bushbacker. And, you know, I'm not. I just agree with some of his policies and disagree with others.
Exactly.
And the same thing, Tim, that's how ufology should be. You disagree with some things, you disagree with others, but, you know, just because you disagree with, say, Roswell, doesn't make you a debunker or an evil person. It just means you disagree with Roswell, but you might agree with RB-47. The point should be, do you think that the exploration of space is worthwhile? Yes, good. Then kudos to President Bush, no matter what you think about him on other policies. Do you think that the serious study of the UFO phenomenon is worthwhile? Yes? Fine. You might disagree with Stan Friedman over Roswell. You might disagree with me over RB-47. But we all agree on the forest.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people should be focusing on. But they don't. They just keep hitting trees.
One last aspect of ufology I want to talk to you about before we move on to some of the other stuff is the overarching sort of conspiracy aspect to the field that's gotten even bigger over the last 20 years or so, probably since the Condon Report, like you said, how everything sort of chilled after that.
Mm-hmm.
There sort of is also that catch-all that a lot of people use, that there's a conspiracy, like Stan says, the Cosmic Watergate.
Yeah.
Now, you're not a big believer in some sort of big cover-up.
No.
And you think that is part of the problem within ufology? I don't want to do a leading question like you criticized earlier.
Bad.
Yeah.
No.
But,
you must be drummed out of ufology immediately. I know what you're saying. Cosmic Watergate, no. I don't think it exists. And people, again, misinterpret that. Whenever anybody says there's no grand overarching conspiracy, they say you're a debunker or you're just ignoring the truth. Here's what I mean. Is the government covering up, if you will, or not releasing all information pertaining to UFOs? Yes. I don't think anybody can look at the facts and dispute that.
Yeah.
The question is, what conclusion do you draw from that? Does that mean that there is some majestic 12-like organization that's covering up crashed alien bodies and flying saucers and all that sort of stuff? Or does it just mean that for whatever reason, some of which might be simple bureaucratic inertia, which, if you don't believe that exists, you don't understand how it works.
Yeah.
You know, it has nothing to do with some grand overarching cover-up. I fall in the latter group. I've never seen any evidence to convince me that there's an overarching plan by the government, like, you know, which government, too. Are they all in on it? That the United States, which can't seem to get anybody to agree on anything these days, somehow managed to get 200 nations around the earth or whatever to all agree to this prohibition on releasing UFO information? Because the UFOs have been seen over Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, China, Uruguay,
yeah.
Argentina. Are all those countries part of the cover-up? I mean, at some point, you just sort of, like, really, you have to sit back and go, like, how big is this thing? And can something be that big? And people will often, defenders of the Cosmic Watergate concept, will reference things like the Manhattan Project. And they'll say, well, government can keep secrets. Yes, government can. For a limited period of time, in a very limited circumstance, for a specific purpose. Absolutely. Can government keep big, massive secrets across the entire globe that all of these people have seen, including other governments? Can you whip them into shape? No. Not for a second do I believe that. If the United States actually had that kind of power, you know, I think you wouldn't be seeing a lot of the problems around the world that exist now. I mean, really, if you're the leaders of Iran, And they have one of the great UFO cases, the Tehran case in 1976. Mm-hmm. I think it's 76. Might have been 78. I'm pretty sure it's 76. If you have that sitting somewhere in your archives, you've got reports, you know, say that the pilots of the Iranian jets really did see UFOs or aliens. Don't you think the Iranian government would release that?
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. Because it would embarrass the American government. They would be able to turn to all their jihadi friends and say, aha, look, the great Satan has lied to you for 50 years, and here we can prove it. And, I mean, great propagandists. Maybe not the Iranians. Maybe for religious reasons the Iranian government wouldn't do it, because all of a sudden Islam, well, what do we make of that now? There's other life in the universe.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, fine, maybe the Uruguayan government releases it. Maybe the Brazilian government releases it.
Or China.
Some government, China. For no other reason, political purposes, to embarrass the United States, because if the U.S. has been covering it up, I guarantee you if that information of a cover-up went out there, I don't know if it would bring down the entire structure of the American governmental system. I don't believe it would. But it would certainly cause an awful lot of problems. And anything that could cause problems to the United States, if you happen to be a foe or competitor of the U.S., that's a good thing. So they would release that information if they could. I mean, the concept of the Cosmic Watergate doesn't make logical sense on so many different levels, it's not even funny. But there's also, I've never seen any evidence to prove it. Having said all that, though, government, yes, has not released all the information on UFOs. In some cases, for very good reasons. People sort of roll their eyes sometimes when you say sources and methods. But you do sometimes, especially during the Cold War, want to protect sources and methods, how you gather intelligence. And what people don't understand, they say, well, the Cold War is over. Why would we still want to protect sources and methods? Well, maybe you wouldn't want to protect your sources. Maybe they're not there anymore. But your methods are still maybe something that, in particular instances, you want to protect. So you want to withhold that information.
Yeah.
I'll give you a good example, though, Tim. Stan is often, he's famous for holding up NSA documents, blacked out NSA documents.
Mm-hmm.
Tells the whole story about how he tried, they went to court to get the NSA to release UFO documents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I said, this is interesting. I'm just going to, on a legal database that has access to all Supreme Court decisions in the United States, federal appeal cases and state cases from all 50 states, I'm going to type in UFO and freedom of information. Sure enough, up came the case regarding the UFOs, the NSA. And there was also a CIA case, too. Great, fine. Now I'm just going to type in freedom of information and NSA. I'm going to see how many cases pop up where the National Security Agency has, on the exact same grounds, because the UFO guys make it sound as if there's some special circumstance. The NSA must regularly release information on everything else, but they never release it to us because UFOs are so super secret.
Yeah.
Well, I typed it in. Dozens of cases came up, maybe even hundreds. I stopped scrolling through them after a while, including Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden, who went after the NSA to get them to release files on Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden when they were anti-war activists.
Mm-hmm.
So the NSA, as a rule, the NSA blanket just says to everybody, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
You can't have it. And then everybody, Joan Baez was another one. Joan Baez versus the NSA, I think it was. You know, CIA, same thing. So they say, no, 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 no. Well, it's not, don't feel special, UFO people. You know, if there's a cosmic Watergate, there's a pop music Watergate. And there's a Watergate for everything. There was the case in the Kennedy assassination, where, by the way, the NSA was ordered by the court to release information. This is hilarious. I think I'm going to put this up on my blog under I Fought the Law, Paranormal Version, Volume 12, or whatever I'm at. Guy wanted, as I recall, he went to the NSA and said, I want you to release a letter written from somebody to somebody. I think it had something to do with Jack Ruby. Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
Yeah.
The court decision said, the NSA said, no, can't release it. The court went through and said, this information is already in the public domain. It's been published. We know it exists, and it's been published. The NSA was saying, well, we admit that it exists. We just can't admit whether we have a copy of it.
Yeah.
And they filed an affidavit to the judge in camera saying, here, you know, as they did with the UFO thing, here's why we can't. And the judge said, this is hogwash. Again, they use sources and methods because, by and large, they just don't want to admit they have anything. And the judge said, this is hogwash. It's already in the public domain. We know it exists. And whatever, you know, there are so many potential sources and methods that foreign spies will never be able to tell from your material where you got it from. So give. But I just thought, this is so ludicrous. To hear UFO people say the NSA is just against us. No, they're against everybody. That's who they are. So if there's a cosmic Watergate, there's a Watergate for everything else. And I think you need to view things like that before you go making grand claims about how the NSA is involved in this massive cover-up of UFO documents or the CIA is. You have to look at it in context of how these agencies operate in terms of everything else. That's what researchers do. But I'm willing to bet, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm willing to bet I'm the only guy who's ever gone and looked to see, well, does the NSA routinely turn down these requests from everybody? Yes. Do everybody routinely take the NSA to court? Yes. You know, do they lose? Usually they do, as the UFO guys did. Usually you don't beat the NSA because there's legislation there that allows them to do this, that sort of skirt around Freedom of Information Act requests. But sometimes, as was the case with this Kennedy thing, the guy did win, but it was so obvious the thing was already in the public domain.
Yeah.
So is there a cosmic Watergate? No. There's so many reasons why there isn't a cosmic Watergate. There's no evidence, unless you believe in MJ-12 or something like that. There's no evidence out there to show that it exists. It's all supposition, and it's supposition not based on a logical reading of the facts and not based on logic at all, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, for reasons that I've sort of just set out.
Yeah.